This episode is sponsored by Celestron, manufacturer of high-quality telescopes and an industry leader in developing exciting optical products with revolutionary technologies.
I'm Kelly Beatty of Sky and Telescope magazine, and tonight we're going on a tour of the stars and planets that you'll see overhead during July. This month, we'll take the measure of Earth's orbit, tell a tale of two eclipses, welcome Jupiter and Saturn to the evening sky, and take a poke at the celestial scorpion. So grab your curiosity and come along on this month's Sky Tour. Hey, it's summertime, at least here in the Northern Hemisphere. Long, warm days and short, warm nights. You'd be surprised how many people think it's hotter now because Earth is closer to the sun. Nope, that's not it. In fact, on July 4th, our little planet will be its farthest away, just over 94.5 million miles, not the average 93 million. No, the reason that it's hot right now is that the northern hemisphere is tipped toward the sun. And that means Earth's bottom half is tipped away from the sun. So right now, it's midwinter in Australia. True darkness is fleeting in summertime, especially at higher latitudes. Here in the Boston area, for example, the last bit of twilight lingers in the west until about 10:30, leaving less than 5 hours of complete darkness to revel in the star-spangled night before dawn begins to creep up in the east. So let's make the most of the darkness we have. And to do that, we'll need to know the moon's whereabouts this month. The month's new moon occurs on July 2nd and full moon on the 16th. But that's only part of the story, because on each of those days, an eclipse takes place. That new moon on July 2nd passes directly in front of the sun, at least as seen from parts of South America, and a total solar eclipse occurs. Now, with Earth its farthest from the sun about that time, the sun looks a little smaller than average. And it turns out that the moon is its closest to Earth on July 5th, making it seem a little bigger than usual. This big moon-little sun combo yields a fairly long total eclipse, about 4.5 minutes at its maximum. And it's the first total solar eclipse since the one that crossed the U.S. in August 2017. Unfortunately, totality occurs only in the southern hemisphere, and not even a hint of partial phases will be visible from the United States. 2 weeks later, July's full buck moon will dive about two-thirds of the way into the dark core of Earth's shadow. Unfortunately, this all happens during daylight in North America, so again, we won't see any of it. Instead, it's best timed for sky watchers in Europe, Africa, and before dawn on the 17th, Southern Asia and Australia. To get more details about what you're missing, head to skyandtelescope.com to check out all the eclipses happening in 2019. Yeah, most of us will miss out on these two eclipses, but you'll feel better knowing that the solar system's two biggest planets are putting on a show in the evening sky. Go outside around 10 p.m., a little later early in July, and a little sooner at month's end, and look toward south. Now, if you're not sure which way south is where you live, watch where the sun sets and make a generous turn toward the left. Gleaming relatively low in the southern sky is a really bright star. Well, actually, it's not a star, but the planet Jupiter. If you haven't checked out the sky these past few weeks, Jupiter has kind of snuck up on us. Back on June 10th, Jupiter reached what's called opposition, that is, positioned opposite the sun in the sky. You might have missed it because it rose right at sunset. But since then, week by week, Jupiter has nudged a little higher up as darkness falls. Now be a little patient and take another look towards south later in the evening, say 11 p.m. Earth's rotation has caused Jupiter to swing to the right, over to the southwest, and you'll see that it's being trailed by another bright beacon well to its left, over in the east, and not very high up. That is Saturn. And it reaches opposition on July 9th. So both of the solar system's largest planets are in view at the same time, and they'll both be gracing our evening skies through November. Now you know that Saturn is surrounded by a beautiful set of rings, But did you know that those rings affect how bright Saturn looks to the eye? Saturn is tipped about 27 degrees with respect to its orbit, very much like Earth's 23 degrees. And Saturn takes 29.5 years to go around the Sun, during which it goes through a cycle of seasons. It turns out that right now, Saturn is tipped toward us, and the rings look wide open from Earth's perspective. Since the ring particles are almost 100% ice, they reflect nearly 100% of the sunlight striking them. So those wide-open rings make Saturn appear extra bright. With Jupiter and Saturn serving as our benchmarks, let's do some celestial sightseeing. To Jupiter's lower right, by a little less than the width of your clenched fist at arm's length, is the star Antares, the brightest star in the constellation Scorpius. This star's reddish hue is strikingly similar to that of Mars, and the resemblance gives the star its name. Antares means, literally, rival of Aries, which is the Greek name for Mars. Antares seems to have an even deeper hue because we usually see it low in the sky where the atmosphere reddens it, just as dense air low down reddens the setting sun. Perhaps more than in any other constellation, the stars of Scorpius really do look like their namesake. Let's trace out the shape. And here's where having a clear southern view becomes important. Antares is the heart of our Scorpion, and close by, to its upper right and lower left, are two medium-bright stars representing its body. Less than one fist to the upper right of Antares are three stars marking the head. To their right are the stars of Libra, the balance scales, but in ancient times, these were perceived as the critter's claws. Trailing from Antares to the lower left is a curving string of stars that form the Scorpion's tail. They arc down and then turn upward, ending in a close-spaced pair of stars at the stinger end. These are sometimes called the cat's eyes by amateur astronomers. The farther south you live in North America or Europe, the easier it is to see the whole tail and stinger. Scorpius also harbors one of the few star clusters that can be easily seen without binoculars or a telescope. It's just to the upper left of the stinger, spaced by about the width of your middle three fingers. This star cluster is the seventh entry in the catalog of 18th century French astronomer Charles Messier, so it's usually called Messier 7, or M7. But the ancient Greek astronomer Claudius Ptolemy had cataloged it nearly 1600 years before Messier did, describing it as a cloudy star behind the sting of the Scorpion. So it's sometimes known as Ptolemy's cluster. Now you might have trouble seeing M7 if your skies are awash with light pollution or summer haze, but binoculars should show it with ease and resolve it into a swarm of individual stars. Return your gaze to Saturn and look to its immediate lower left. This puts you in the constellation Sagittarius, the Archer. Now, most sky watchers don't see someone slinging arrows here. Instead, look for a grouping of medium-bright stars, about the size of your clenched fist, that trace out the shape of a teapot. No kidding. The best time to see this is around midnight when the teapot is due south and highest in the sky. It's tipped toward the right, as if pouring into the tail of Scorpius, with its spout at lower right and its handle at upper left. Now just above Saturn are three stars in a flat triangle that sky watchers call the teaspoon. Its handle is marked by two dim stars a little to the upper left. And although it's completely invisible to our eyes, Pluto is perched just half a fist to Saturn's lower left and some 3 billion miles away. Wow. Now let's swing over to the southwest, about five fists to the right of Jupiter. Look for a bright solitary beacon with an icy white color. That's Spica, or more properly, Spica, the anchor star for the constellation Virgo, the Maiden. She's lying sideways in the sky with her head toward the right and her legs toward left. Spica is Latin for ear of grain, and Virgo is often depicted holding stalks of grain in her hand. High above Virgo is dazzling Arcturus, the alpha star for the kite-shaped constellation Boötes, meaning herdsman or plowman. Arcturus, which marks the kite's tail, is the fourth brightest star in the nighttime sky. That's mostly because it's relatively close by, only 37 light-years away. Arcturus means guardian of the bear, so called because it's not far from Ursa Major, the Big Bear, farther north. One more thing, near the end of July, you might see occasional meteors from a long-lasting shower called the Southern Delta Aquarids. This shower has a reputation for delivering a steady stream of meteors over several days, with counts as high as 20 per hour visible from the darkest locations with no interference from moonlight, as will be the case this year. That's about it for this month. If you want more tips for viewing the night sky, check out Sky at a Glance on our website. It offers great star and planet gazing activities on a day-by-day basis. If you haven't already subscribed, you can find this Sky Tour on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or wherever you listen. And please leave a rating and review. It helps others find the show. And if you want to explore the solar system and universe more deeply, please do check out the full line of binoculars and telescopes available at Celestron.com. Sky Tour is a production of F&W Media Studios and is produced by me, Kelly Beatty. Our executive producer of podcasts is Jared Mayer. Join me next month when we'll look for steam coming from the teapot and what that has to do with the Milky Way. Until then, I wish you clear skies.